This episode of the Agile Uprising podcast is brought to you by VGroup Digital. VGroup Digital provides native cloud-based software development services on iOS, Android, web, Mac, and Windows, as well as enterprise product development, maintenance, and support. VGroup Digital is led by a team of agile practitioners who believe in collaboration, constant feedback, and delivering the highest value at all times. Visit www.vgroupdigital.com for more info and mention the Agile Uprising podcast to get up to 15% off all development services.
This is the Agile Uprising podcast.
I want to welcome everyone to another Agile Uprising podcast. Tonight, we are lucky enough to have a great group of Agile practitioners. Tonight, we're going to be discussing women in the lean Agile universe. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. I'm going to have our guests tonight go ahead and introduce themselves. So why don't we go ahead and start with Lisa?
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here. I'm Lisa Crispin, and I've been in the software business since the early 80s when there were just as many women as men. So it's been an interesting journey for me as I've moved through different teams and found fewer and fewer women. But I'm really excited to have an event like this, a podcast like this. Back in 2010, Mike Sutton and I did a Women in Agile project for the Agile Alliance where we just interviewed women in Agile, and it's super great to be able to just have a podcast and have this discussion. I'm really seeing a lot of changes, so I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. So next, why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit of info about yourself?
Okay. My name is Colleen Johnson, and I'm the Lean and Agile Practice Director for ImagineX Consulting. I focus a lot of my efforts there on teaching Kanban and helping organizations scale Kanban to the enterprise. I'm also the co-founder of Scatterspoke.com, which is a tool for online distributed retrospectives. And I've been in the software world for about 15 years. So I have probably a very different lens than Lisa, and I'm excited to hear a lot about what her experiences were like before and now, and everybody in this podcast. I think this discussion is a great one, and one that everybody can bring a lot of different experiences to the table to share.
Great. Thanks, Colleen. Janice, why don't you go ahead and give us an introduction?
Sure. I'm Janice Linden Reed, and I'm the CEO of Lean Kanban Incorporated. So I run the training program, the events, the publishing, a bunch of different aspects of the Kanban market. And I have also been in the software industry since the mid-80s, and I got into Agile in 2008. I've had many experiences where I've been the only woman working at in an office. So I'm very interested in this topic. I tend to be a dissenter on the whole women in blank groups. So I'm very interested to hear what everyone has to say.
Great. And Becky, how about a quick introduction?
Great. Thanks, Andrew. My name is Becky Hartman, and I'm an Agile coach at Agile Thought in Tampa, Florida. And I've been probably in the software space for maybe only 3 to 4 years. And before that was in IT, in infrastructure and project management. I came up in kind of the PMP world and migrated over with the ACP on through with some other certifications. Kind of felt like a real natural progression for me. From maybe like I could breathe out, like I had a team with me instead of I was the one who was responsible for everything that was going on. And recently I've actually this last year with two other partners been speaking on the topic, and we actually spoke for PMI on women in project management, but we took it around a couple of venues. And so it was kind of a women in, you know, fill in the blank, kind of as Janice said. And really, we talked from an aspect of, we know there are aspects that are definitely unfair, but we talked about kind of where we limit ourselves and how we can improve ourselves and help ourselves more in ways that benefit us. So I'm very interested in this topic and this conversation as well.
So that's great. Thanks everyone again for joining. So I think that's an interesting sort of segue into the conversation, Becky. So how has your journey taken you since you've started till now? Sort of what areas or what contributions do you see that have helped, that have been challenging? So walk us through, if someone wants to go ahead and sort of walk us through how that journey has progressed and sort of some of the interesting facts about it.
Well, this is Lisa. I think one interesting thing is what we didn't know that went on before. I've just recently read some books about women who were pioneers in programming back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And it's really great that somebody thought to write about these women who worked at universities or at NASA or Jet Propulsion Laboratory, different places where computing was started to be used for something practical. And I wonder sometimes when I was growing up in the 60s, what would my decisions have been about what I wanted to do if I'd have known about those women? Because I totally fell into the software industry in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So there were wonderful women who went before us. And I puzzled over why there were so many women when I started working in software and then by the end of the century, so few. And unfortunately, I think some of it is because computing originally was low status work. The hardware was the sexy thing, and the software was just manipulating a bunch of relays and stuff, a lot of manual grunt work, and that was low paid, and so that was for women. And when the software got more important and it got higher paid, apparently, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of reasons. They're very complex, but definitely there was some reason that women were edged out and more men got in. So it's just over time that happened, but I really have seen huge changes recently in reversing that trend, so that's quite heartening.
This is Colleen. I was going to say that one of the things that I think has been fairly interesting, I think I haven't been in the software world as long as some of the amazing people on the podcast with us, but I think one of the things that I found challenging in my career was when I started to start a family, and I think there's definitely, you know, a disconnect between a number of men and the number of women in software now, but I felt it a lot. I felt a lot harder struggles personally once I was a mother and trying to deal with being a consultant who was trying to pump in random places, and random offices I had never been to. And, I think I started feeling, I never felt like I was put in a different position because I was a woman, or couldn't advance my career the way I wanted to because I was a woman. I actually feel like I've had a lot of amazing opportunities and have been given a great seat at the table when I want it. But I felt like it was hard with being a mother in some of those environments and having to deal with, you know, leaving to pick up a sick kid. And that wasn't something that I felt like a lot of my male counterparts had to deal with.
Colleen, I wondered about that too, because, for example, I'm a tester on the Pivotal Tracker team at Pivotal, and one of the things about Pivotal, because they pair program all the time, everybody works the same hours, and there's not the flexibility that I've had at other companies, and I would expect that would affect a lot of women who had families or had parents to take care of, whatever. Do you feel like that is maybe one of the factors that comes in for women?
Well, and I was just going to say, so, I mean, there's all kinds of data out there, and definitely blog posts in different cases where women have experienced that in more subtle and nuanced ways, not necessarily outright stated, but in the ways like if you typically the whole crew is there at the same time, like you're saying, Lisa, or, you know, Colleen, when you feel like there's pressure there. I mean, certainly I felt the same thing. I had a daughter who had many allergies when she was young, and there was 2 weeks the first time we discovered where I left almost every other day to have to pick her up from school. And I really felt a lot of pressure from my manager just to like, oh, I need you back here as quick as I can. You know, subtle things like that, that really make you nervous, especially as a single parent, which I was then, to kind of comply with that. It always seems to be, and I guess I shouldn't say always, in a lot of cases that, you know, the traditional roles play out and moms, you know, typically take the brunt of those kinds of things, you know, even in a normal household, right? So there's definitely statistics that point to that, and even more so that both men and women are harder on women. And even when there was a survey done through one of the project managers who's very active in the PMI community, that both men and women see men as more dedicated to their roles, specifically in project management, but it does tend to trend across other industries. So it's like, if women kind of feel the way that we feel, and also there's a perception that maybe men are more dedicated, that's quite a nuance to be had in any industry.
Definitely. And I would agree with what you said. I mean, I think sometimes that we are the hardest on ourselves, right? Like you said, about feeling guilty, about feeling like you have to leave or have to go mm-hmm. take care of kids. I definitely can, that resonates strongly with me, because I think sometimes, you know, even if everybody said it was fine and it wasn't a big deal, I was beating myself up probably more than I needed to.
Oh, absolutely.
About not being as present. Yeah.
Janice, do you have anything you'd like to add, or?
Just, you know, my mother was a professional kind of in journalism, and I sort of saw her go through all of this, you know, get hassled a lot at her job for leaving to take care of her kids and all that. And I don't know, it hasn't really been a big issue for me for various reasons. And I feel like I don't have a lot of stories to tell about that. I do have a daughter, but that I've always, maybe always, been careful to structure my life so I have a lot of either part-time or flexible situations. But I totally agree that women are really hard on other women, and by the same token, they're really hard on themselves. Mm-hmm. And I find that comes up again and again.
That is the topic that seems to come up like over and over and over again with colleagues. I was actually really fortunate enough to just be in St. Louis this past weekend at the ACCUS, the Agile Coaches Camp in the U.S. And we did, we convened a session on women in Agile, and there were maybe only five of us there talking. But, you know, that's one thing that came up over and over is, what do we see and how do we feel we can help each other with those kinds of things, because we are so hard on ourselves. We innately, and I guess there are probably statistics out there about this too, like women don't tend to apply for jobs unless they feel they really have almost all of the qualifications, which, if you know, if you're looking at job postings, is almost impossible for any human to have all of those qualifications, whereas our male counterparts will apply with far less, you know, assurance that they have those skills. I mean, it goes on and on, the kinds of things that we self-impose upon ourselves, the rules that we play by, or how we consider ourselves worthy or not worthy of things. And, you know, really, for me, building a strong network and having people give me honest feedback has really been key to kind of telling me I'm full of it when I need to kind of stop it, right? Or be encouraging to myself, be my own best friend, or have a best friend to help me out with some of those topics.
So this is Lisa. I like to point out, it's not just women who are hard on women. Everybody's hard on women. And I don't have the research right in front of me, but there are very solid scientific studies that show that, I don't know, remember the exact number, but in terms of performance evaluations, something like 85% of women have had something negative on their performance evaluation. Guess what the percentages of men? It's something like 5%. And we wonder why women don't rise up through the levels of the organization. That's just a small example. There's a lot of solid research out there. But, you know, it's a real thing. And it's not just us being hard on us. We shouldn't blame ourselves. There's a lot of cultural stuff to work against.
So Very true. I agree with that.
Have you had any success in sort of combating some of that behavior?
Well, since I work with events and I organize events and I'm a program chair sometimes. And I've learned that you actually have to explicitly invite women who could potentially be a good speaker. If I'm running a training class and a woman talks about her work situation and it's really interesting and really compelling and she has really great experience, I find that I actually have to go up and, you know, and even if I had already said, look, we're looking for speakers, you know, to the whole class, I'll find that I literally have to go up to the woman and say, hey, I think you have really something to say, something to contribute, and you should apply, and then follow up with that person. And I really don't do that because it's a woman, just because, you know, oh, I want more women at the event. I do it because I feel they actually do have something to contribute. And if I don't invite them explicitly, it doesn't even occur to them. I mean, that's what they say all the time to me. They're like, I never would have thought of it. It's something as simple as that.
Invitation makes a big difference. And there's definitely a lot to be said about kind of shifting that focus and giving people a different filter to look through, envisioning themselves that way. As you said, one of the things that I've recently read about made complete sense, and actually had the experience just today, was that sometimes when women speak, again, as we pointed out, women and men are both harder on women. Sometimes thoughts aren't heard. You feel like things are glossed over. They attribute it more to when women are speaking in a group where there are, you know, maybe equal male to female or predominantly male, where the idea is brushed over. And then a few minutes later, somebody else says the idea and the idea is attributed to that other person. And recently there was an article that came out on Vox.com about the Obama White House and how even though he definitely leans in favor and has made great strides in having more women in his White House and in his cabinet, the women were still experiencing that phenomenon, and they began doing something they called amplification, which is where when one woman speaks and says an idea, if the idea isn't validated or acknowledged, another woman will repeat the idea and attribute it to the woman who initiated the conversation or the idea. To make sure that there's some confirmation of that statement, and experienced it just today in a meeting that we were having, you know, mixed both male and women, and it did work. I mean, it was good. It kind of felt like there'd been no recognition of it, and then when the second person said it, there was recognition. I don't think it's necessarily an intentional thing at all, and I think to some extent, maybe everyone experiences it, but they have, again, done the studies that women statistically experience it far more than men. And I think that's a good way to do it. It's also letting someone know that you've heard them if you're amplifying what they've said. It's a really good tool for communication. Use it in mirroring and all of those things. So it's good all around as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I love that. I've been learning a lot of techniques of, you know, good communication and that was just an awesome one. And I think also, you know, women are more likely to come in when they see more women. So I know a few companies that have a lot, for example, have a lot of women developers. Well, once you have a lot of women developers, let's say you have at least a third, if you bring in a new interview candidate and they look around and they're like, wow, I see myself here, then they're much more likely to consider that employer. Today I learned that ThoughtWorks was given an award at the Grace Hopper Conference because they actually have more women than men at a tech company. Woo! And I'm sure that, you know, I think once you get to a critical mass of women, it's a lot easier because we can see ourselves. It's like, wow, I can imagine being there because I can see myself. So I think it is important to bring in more women, and I've had similar experiences to Janice. I've helped organize a lot of conferences over the years, and I'll often ask a woman I know, say, wow, would you consider proposing to this conference because you have some great experiences? And she'll say, well, you know, there's nothing I do that other people don't do. There's nothing I know that other people don't know. And say, well, but your experience is unique. And one thing that I've done personally is I've the last couple of years, all of my conference sessions have been pairing with other women. Always women, new speakers. Sometimes I still can't find a woman to present with me. So, okay, a guy is okay. But just to give them the experience, because once they've done it, it builds their confidence. It makes them more likely to be accepted at another conference. And we have the Speakeasy organization doing that kind of mentoring for new women speakers. And again, if we see ourselves at tech conferences, we're more likely to speak. We're more likely to participate. So I think all these efforts are really contributing to helping us see ourselves in this context so that we want to join in.
And I think one of the things that you just touched on, Lisa, that's kind of interesting too, and Janice, the same thing about inviting the speakers, is I think because there is such an effort right now to bring more women into not just Agile, but technology in general, I think it does make you sometimes question why you're there, right? And the uncomfortable part can be, I think that puts a lot of women, and I would put myself in this boat, in the position where you feel like you have to prove why you got that spot to speak or that seat at the table or a voice in the conversation, because you're not sure if it's because are we trying to balance out the number of women, or are we trying to make sure, you know, did you earn your seat with your credentials? And so I think that environment you described, where there's more women developers than male developers, that's probably a great environment where you feel like you don't have to come in with your fists up to prove yourself and prove yourself as being the only woman developer. You earned your spot, and you know you're there because you're great at what you do.
Yeah, and I mean, I've obviously had those experiences even not long ago of being told, like, openly, like, you're being invited to speak because you're a woman. And, you know, and we're trying to get more women at this event. And I'm just like, I know I'm really qualified. I know I've done a lot of public speaking. So, really, that's why I'm being invited. And we're seeing some very disturbing trends around that, where men are sort of, I mean, really sort of patting themselves back for how, you know, socially responsible they are for going around doing this positive discrimination. And it's you know, I really do have a problem with that. I mean, even with, you know, Lisa, what you were saying about ThoughtWorks giving an award or being given an award for having more female developers, it's like, I, you know, part of me is like, why? You know, why is that? Even though I know the reality is they probably had to overcome a lot of opposition, whatever, to be, you know, even within their organization to achieve that. But just on the face of it, why is it better?
The award was being a great place to work if you are a woman, but the fact that they have more women than men probably contributes to that for sure.
Well, yes.
And my understanding is that they do, and I may be totally wrong with this, I don't work for ThoughtWorks, but I do believe that they make a special effort to, like, let's try to hire as many women as men, but that doesn't mean that they lower their standards. So they're very careful. They have quite an interesting hiring process and quite a high standard. So I don't think they're lowering their standards to fill in women. But, you know, at the same time, there are times that I think, why am I working so hard to get women to conferences and things and working in software companies? Because I hear horrible, horrible, horrible stories even today. I hear of women, even women close to my age, being hounded out of jobs at tech companies unfairly, being just abused by men. I hear of women at conferences being attacked at the end of the evening when they walk back to their hotel by men who have clearly waited at the exit to the conference event to prey on these women. This just isn't okay. And should I be trying to get more women to join in this? And I, you know, so I'm working really hard at getting conference organizers aware of this and working on codes of conduct and working on to keep everybody at a conference safe. But yeah, it's a real dilemma, because at the one hand, it's like, wow, I love this business, I want more women here. And the other hand, it's like, okay, these women had a horrible experience. Do I want to lure someone else into that horrible experience?
Right. And that, this is a great point, is that I've been telling people, is like, how about before we bring a bunch more women in, we work more on how we're treating the women who are already here? Because this whole thing of, you know, interruptible, talking over people, taking credit for people's ideas, you know, all that women, you know, it happens to me, it happens to other women that I see. I really think people should address that first. I'm not a fan of the code of conduct because, let's say someone's being attacked outside a conference venue or something like that. Is a code of conduct going to make a difference there? You know, I mean, wouldn't you throw those people out anyway? It's complicated. And I think if we can just start by supporting women that are in our community, making sure they're being treated well and making it a more appealing place. What I'm also seeing are women who are actually leveraging this positive discrimination trend to get status such as speaking positions that they do not deserve. And that's, I think, really, really disturbing. Even more disturbing than that, I see men bringing women in the name of having more diversity and then their motives are suspect as well. It's incredibly complicated. People want to make it this flippant thing. I'm not saying any of you are doing this, but I'm saying that I hear this, especially from men in the community, that like, oh yeah, just bring in more women. Why aren't there more women? What's the problem? And it's not that simple.
Yeah. And quite often, right? Because human, nothing is ever quite that simple as we want it to be. Right. So I just wonder, Janice, do you have leading ideas or maybe larger ideas? I know they're still complex, but I'm really interested because Claire, you've seen this a lot. I've not had the experience of really applying much and speaking at conferences yet. I was just very fortunate to have someone offer to share their speaking position with me at a conference that's coming up in November. And I'm working my best to take advantage of that because she's mentoring me through that. But do you have other ideas on how we can help to, like you said, maybe not pull more folks in at this moment, but help to make it more safe and the things that we can do there as a group?
Yeah, I mean, the experiment that I'm looking to try, I have not actually kicked it off, but I'm hoping to this month, is having a maybe not even a women-only group, but some kind of a private online group that's a friendly audience where you can take your intellectual property, such as articles that you've written or presentations that you've put together, whatever, and you could, you know, circulate those for feedback. Because the other thing is I want to make sure that women have very strong content, because it's not doing any, you know, women any favors if they're putting women, on a stage or publishing women's work if it's weak. And sometimes just partly through lack of practice or lack of experience or whatever it is, it can be weak. So I don't like that I'll look at a conference program and see a bunch of soft presentations that are all the women's presentations. I mean, I just think that's sort of sending the wrong signal. So I really think if we can help those of us who are more experienced can work with these women and that are newer to it and help them develop their ideas and develop their confidence, then hopefully that would help.
Yeah, I've seen real results from the speakeasy program on that we have mentors who work with people. They work with conference organizers to say, you know, will you take a couple of our mentees to speak, and knowing that they'll have an experienced mentor helping them. And that's been working out great. Speakeasy has gotten women speaking at conferences, and the evaluations have been great, and they've been going on to doing other conference presentations, and some of them even getting into, you know, keynoting and things like that. So, but that's because they have this support behind them. So I agree. It's like, we have to make sure that it's not tokenism. It's people are, these women are really contributing value.
Yeah, that's a great word for it, Lisa. I think that tokenism is what none of us want to be on the other side of that either.
And I think I also participate in a handful of women in whatever groups. And one of my favorites is the Women Who Start Up group. And that one I really find is kind of what you're describing, Janice, and just trying to create a really safe place for people to share ideas, to share their failures, to ask people to, will you help me review my resume? I'm about to go interview for this job. There are men on there. It's open to men, but it is mostly women. And I feel like it's just a very friendly space and safe place for everybody to just kind of get that feedback and mentorship in a lot of different ways. And I really enjoy that part of it because it doesn't feel like anybody's in there looking for a handout or looking for something special because they're a woman. It's just a way to network and mentor each other.
I think having that kind of support is really powerful. But also, though, I really would like to see women step up and be a little bit braver. I mean, I've had a lot of women say, oh, I would never talk on that discussion forum because, people always get into these big debates or people always get into these, I don't want to actually, argue or defend my position. And I get that men see argument as sort of a sport. There have been studies on that men will actually take a position that they don't even hold for the enjoyment of the debate. And women often don't like to do that. And I'm curious to know if for all of you all, I know for me, I'm not afraid. I'll get right out there. And if, often it isn't the response I want. I mean, maybe it isn't as supportive or I get ignored or something like that. But I wonder if the women in our community who've been around for a while, are they maybe a little more assertive that way?
This is Becky. I know for me, it would depend on the topic. Certainly, I am a lot stronger as I've gotten older and further along in my career to say, I'd like to challenge that, or I really don't agree with that statement and, try to negotiate. I like good debate. And the team I'm on now, we have a lot of good debate and a lot of challenges when we talk things through. And I think that we handle that conflict really well. I also know that in certain forums, I would probably stay quieter, and that may sometimes it has to do with just not feeling like I'm well informed and therefore don't feel like I really have an argument to make, even if I don't like what somebody else is saying. But I will admit that there are times where I don't enter into because I don't want to draw down the ire, right? I see many of the women that I follow on Twitter that, and even if they're not in a debate or simply if they disagree, man, the trolls are horrible. And there's a certain line that crosses that makes me feel very unsafe for them. So at those points, I won't enter into those kinds of debates.
So do you guys see any difference in the Agile community with with some of these obstacles that you're discussing? Is there a different lens within the Agile community because of the promotion of collaboration and so forth? Do you feel there's any sort of, there's a different perception or acceptance?
Well, this is Lisa. Personally, I have seen a big difference as a tester. Well, I've been in a lot of roles over the years, but the testing community back in the early to mid-90s, and even today, there are certain people in that community who, in my opinion, are bullying women. And I have not experienced that in the Agile community. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but I just personally haven't experienced it. I feel like from the first time I joined an extreme programming team back in 2000, it was an extremely welcoming and as you say, collaborative community. And I think, when you have a community based on values of collaboration and feedback and people are the most important thing, I think that's going to have an impact. And I hope we can get away from the label of Agile and say that's just the way we should develop software. But unfortunately, when you're talking about people writing books or presenting at conferences, some people do develop an ego And unfortunately, some of those leaders, in my opinion, what I've seen is that they, for whatever reason, are extremely hard on the women. And I don't like to see that, but I personally haven't seen that in the Agile community. Again, doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I do feel like we're, that's what attracted me to Agile. It's about the people and enabling people to do their best work. All people, including women. Yeah. And that's really been great for me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Lisa. And I have seen a few that I think probably hit celebrity status in our community that I've seen some tweets and heard some things, but by and large, I have a very large group of what I consider male colleagues that I know I'm safe with, and I know that they promote the values of, for instance, say we're in a conference situation, they want to, you know, there was a group of men talking this year at the Agile Alliance conference that we're talking about, you know, how do we promote not to show women that they're safe with us necessarily. There's a lot of women here who support women and there's some safe space, but how do we kind of, without having to say to other guys, look, we don't condone those kinds of behaviors. Like, is there a button? Is there a symbol? And there was a great conversation between, several male colleagues that talked about, you know, making sure that they let other men know that there is a certain standard of behavior they expect at conferences and around everyone, and even more specifically, like unacceptable conference behaviors for males towards women. And I was really, really heartened and thrilled to hear that it wasn't not my problem because I'm not a female, like my problem because I'm a human and this is my community, right?
Yeah, I find that the Agile community, in my experience, has been very warm toward women. Like Lisa said, very sort of people and team based. The Lean community, it's also very people oriented, but it's very intense in terms of being very, everything's very data driven and very, scientific method and it's less of the warm fuzzies. It isn't that it's been more hostile to women, but it's not been as open arms, let's all hang out on the couch together kind of happy experience that I've had with the Agile community.
Yeah, I feel like I've kind of had a foot in either world for a good part of my career now. And I would definitely agree. And I think that, some of what you talked about with an openness for debate and for conversation, I think some of that breaks down a little bit in some of the stuff in the Lean community because it is more data driven and a lot of people view those conversations as a more black and white topic.
Yes.
You're right or you're wrong and there's nothing in the middle. So I think in general, some of those debates do get a little more heated and intense. And there is more of a reluctance to put things out there from not just females, males too. I think that's not a gender thing.
Oh, yeah,
thing.
It's
more
that's true.
The nature of some of the debate topics. I feel like I've seen some of the stuff we're talking about with conference behavior at all different types of conferences, regardless of the topic or the, which side of the Agile community it's in. And I think what Becky described is really, really inspiring. I mean, I think it's very cool. I think, one of the speakers who was at GlueCon in Colorado last year, Mary Scatton from Salesforce, talked about how, we keep having the same conversation, but we have to get everybody involved in it. So all the stuff we're talking about with having great mentors is not just women mentoring women on how to put together a great conference proposal or write a great book or, deliver a great keynote. It's everyone in the community helping mentor women so that they're confident that they're delivering great, great content and a message that's on point.
Just to take this to an extreme, there's also this whole issue of how at conferences now, a lot of times in these codes of conduct, they talk about how, well, there shouldn't be sexualized imagery or sexualized clothing, or there shouldn't be booth babes. And it really, I think, starts getting into conflict with the whole sort of slut shaming and women owning their own sexuality. So I think, you know, it's interesting where this can all go. It's, I guess it's much of it is context.
Now, I've been guilty of that myself. I was at a conference several years ago where at the speaker dinner the night before the conference started, I saw a woman who was, I thought, quite provocatively dressed. And I just, this is terrible, but I just assumed she was just the date or the wife or whatever right. of one of the attendees. And so then the next day at the conference, I saw a topic that I thought sounded really, really great. And so I went to the room where the topic was, and here was that same woman. She was a speaker and still dressed provocatively. And I thought, well, I can't imagine that she can deliver a good talk on this in the time slot she has allowed. And I mean, she just blew me away. And she also made all the men in the room extremely uncomfortable. And that was a good lesson on my own judge, leaning to judge people for their cover or whatever. Of course, she should dress how she wants to dress. And she is an incredibly smart woman who knows what she's talking about. And that's a good lesson to all of us. And so, yeah, it shouldn't matter how people look or how they,
Yeah, Lisa, I agree with you. And you know, part of it is that it's kind of what's been built into the DNA of how we view things. Again, men and women are both harder on women. Mm-hmm. Like we've discussed multiple times now, the double blind studies are out there that prove it. And, you know, I actually read that for the first time, though, that the study existed before Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, but I read it in her book. And I've spent a good couple of years, like, even if I have a reaction, like, I really try to check myself. Like, what is that about? Like, are you being unfair? Is that because we've so learned to judge? And I know to some extent, because human people do that, but women have a very special way of judging themselves and each other, right? Mm-hmm. Based on appearances and making those assumptions. And I'm sure men make those assumptions too, but it's kind of like been turned into almost this, silent catfight, if you will, in certain scenarios. And I've learned a lot from my reactions, just like you're saying that you did, that really have, you know, I've had some preconceived notions that have surely bitten me in the ass before. And sometimes that's how we learn, but I hope I don't forget, right? Because I'm thinking if I'm doing that to someone else is doing it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to lose opportunities or miss the opportunity to learn from somebody else or contribute or mentor or be mentored, you know, because of that, right? I don't want to isolate myself or someone else.
Right. So you guys are all bringing up really, it all seems to be stemming around value, these core values. I actually like the way you said that, Lisa, when you were talking earlier. How do, you know, within the sphere of control or however you want to phrase it, how do you sort of enforce that or, you know, pollinate that we should be focusing on values and less around some of these other obstacles that we have? How do we promote sort of getting that out there? And as sort of individuals in this industry, how do you empower and promote this for the next wave so that maybe you can alleviate some of these challenges for females or women coming into this and sort of starting out? What sort of guidance can you provide that would give sort of the next wave of more tools in their toolkit?
I think we have to have certain standards. We're all professionals here. And I think that, if the more we can do with promoting our work as management science, and really making that clear to men and women that that's really what we want to see, then I think that's, you know, that's a good place to start. It's like, let's stay true to the work, let's stay true to customer value.
And then to add to that, right, the values of, you know, promoting, you know, knowledge work, right? That's what we're talking about when we're saying, having, you know, having strong content, having a strong way to present, you know, that mentoring piece and that learning. I mean, that's that volunteer feeling, idea, giving back to the community is something that's really present in the Agile community, but I think it's also something really present. I mean, you hear it present in all of us, but that's what we think helps. I'm sure we all have stories of those who have helped us and those who we've helped. And I think continuing to be that kind of mentor and volunteer, you know, kind of modeling that behavior. And it's definitely one of those topics and behaviors that I personally have no problem getting into the debate about. You know, we were talking about that intense debate and speaking up. This is the thing to speak up about, right? Is to be helpful and to help propel people forward and, you know, let people know that you don't believe that holding people back for whatever reason is the right thing to do, right? I think if we continue to talk about those things and promote those things through our behaviors, but that really helps, you know, the next wave, as you've said, Andrew, to continue.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is up to the leadership of today's tech companies. Women are historically shunted off into, you know, the pink collar executive jobs or the glass cliff. Oh yeah, we'll give a woman an executive position, but it's going to be one where she's surely to fail because it's an impossible project. Unfortunately, again, there are scientific studies that shows that goes on. And I mentioned ThoughtWorks earlier. They have a woman CTO. I think that's not a coincidence. So I really feel like companies, yeah. I know they're all well-intentioned, but I think until we see women at the executive level in tech companies, it's going to be harder to bring women in. And if we could see more women at the executive level, that's going to just percolate all down through the organizations and make us all feel safer to be women working in the software industry. So I really am hoping we're going to see more of that, because I think it's a component. I think we can all help each other. Supporting each other is incredibly helpful. And I'm a member of some support groups where, you know, women in testing, chatting online, whatever, it's very helpful to me. That's one side of it, but we also have to see the leadership of companies also take their side.
Yeah, I like this concept that we're all talking about mentoring and reaching out. And, you know, I think it's partly professional growth and it's partly, you know, having somebody you can talk to, right? Whether it's I had to pump in the basement of a building downtown. Right? sometimes it's not 100% work or being taken seriously at work. I mean, sometimes there's other things that I think having strong females in the workplace, in the community, in the Agile community, the Lean Kanban community that you can talk to when things are going well and when things aren't going well, or if you have a shitty your talk doesn't go very well, right? I want to sit down with somebody and be like, I don't know what I just did. Can you help me? So I think some of it's helping mentor, but it's also creating really great relationships with all the strong, smart women in this community we're in.
Yeah, and there are a lot of us.
Yeah, there are a ton.
So I think that's a good point. So there are a lot of you. So I know that this has been extremely educational for me. Would there be an interest in continuing this conversation as a series, you know, to blossom this, to get more sort of information and interaction out there? Could this be a good vehicle to do that? You know, whether it be via podcasting or online communities, you know, do you see more of this as being a benefit, or is there?
Yeah, absolutely.
More...
I mean, yeah, Andrew, there is a Women in Agile Slack group out there that I think emerged out of a couple of years of different groupings being convened. And I know this group in particular, I believe Natalie Warnert and Lisa Atkins got together and kind of formed this grouping, but I'm not sure. I mean, there are a whole bunch of little autonomous groups mentoring and doing things in their communities and feeding back into this larger group to share information and share articles. So there is a Slack group out there, and I can, you know, get the information and we can put it on Agile Uprising site
for those who are interested, but there is a growing community. I think though I do think it has to be more than just, you know, a Slack group and a place to talk, but what are we actively doing? Like Lisa said, with Speakeasy and like Janice's experiment that she wants to do, we maybe need a place to, a sounding board, a place to post those opportunities or to share those opportunities widely to continue to communicate so little pockets can merge into larger, you know, groupings. But I do think it's an ongoing conversation.
That's great. I'm, as I said, this is extremely educational for me. And so I appreciate the information. So I know we're coming up on the hour here, so I don't want to necessarily time box anyone out from saying anything, but I wanted to give everyone an opportunity to possibly, if you're speaking at any engagements or you want to sort of open up and provide any information about yourself where people can find you, follow you, and so forth, I definitely want to allow that opportunity before we sort of wrap things up. But I also would like to welcome you back to do this again. I think an hour to sort of cover such a broad topic isn't quite enough, but I'm not sure anyone can quite go on to listen to a podcast for 4 hours. So, you know, I would love to see this continue. If there's an appetite to continue, I would love to see this conversation continue. So don't necessarily need an answer or anything. So I'm going to go ahead and just sort of go around the horn. And Lisa, is there anything that you have coming up? Are you speaking anywhere or anything you want to sort of promote or throw your Twitter out there for people to follow you?
Thanks. I'm Lisa Crispin on Twitter and most social media, and lisacrispin.com is my website. And if you're interested, you know, if you're thinking about speaking at a conference, I would love to help you with your proposal, whatever. I pair with a lot of people to present. My next conference is Agile Testing Days in Potsdam, Germany. And I really love these conference organizers because they work so hard to get more women speaking at the conference and more women attending the conference, and not just women, other, you know, all the minorities, all the diversity. And so I really, you know, we need to support the conferences that are doing this. We need to spend our time and money helping the organizers that are trying to help our community. So I'm really excited about that. I love hearing from everybody, and I love these discussions and hearing these different viewpoints, and I've learned a lot doing this. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Lisa. Thank you again for your participation. So this is good. So Janice, do you want to go ahead and you have anything you want to plug or promote?
Let's see. I've got the Lean Kanban North America conference for 2017. That website is up and looking for speakers. So people can go on the website and apply if they want to, and I do not discriminate men versus women, but I encourage anyone to apply to speak. We're always looking for new voices, and I think the next place I'm speaking is the Kanban Leadership Retreat in Dubai in January. So anyone wanting to get into the more advanced topics, do check out the Kanban Leadership Retreat. It's sort of an open space.
Great, thanks. That's Dubai. We could go off on a topic on that all on our own. Becky, how about you?
So I'm on Twitter at Bex, BECKSPM. And other than that, I have yet to have my first conference speaking experience. I've done several locally and look to continue that. So I'll get back to you on that. Hopefully soon in the next year, I'll have a couple of venues to talk about. And I've really enjoyed the conversation. I think we've had a rich kind of pocket of information and different but blended ideas and statements and ways to look at things. So I'm definitely glad I got to participate in this.
Great, thank you. And Colleen?
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter under Scrum Hive. I have a couple of speaking engagements coming up at the Silicon Valley Agile Leadership Network meetup in December, the Tri-Valley East Bay Agile Leadership Network meetup in March, and then an Agile and Beyond conference in Ann Arbor, Michigan in May. All three of those topics will be on scaling Kanban to the enterprise. And I agree with Becky. I think one of the things that's so interesting in participating in these conversations in different areas of our business and our lives is that everybody does have a very different take on what they've seen and what they want to see happen next. Whether it's as a parent, as a sister, as a daughter of somebody, right? We've all got a different lens that we're viewing these experiences through. So I think it's always really eye-opening to hear everybody's what everybody wants to see happen next. So I really appreciate the conversation as well, and I'd love to keep it going in the future.
Yeah. So speaking of that, we'll be publishing this podcast out on Agile Uprising, and hopefully everyone is a member of the coalition so we can continue to collaborate as a community and sort of hopefully drive home that message around value and values, being human as opposed to anything else. So again, I just want to thank you again for all your participation, and I've taken a lot of notes. So if we do want to continue this conversation, it would be great to sort of tailor the next convert or the next podcast around some of the information that you guys have provided, and we can sort of go down a different path or a more detailed path. So it was interesting keeping the open conversation and just seeing where it would go. So again, I thank everyone for being open and honest and just having a good conversation. So I appreciate your time, and thank you.